Douglas and Tyla here with you today. A few of you have asked that we continue on with some of the spiritual discussions that we've been having. Douglas is getting ready for a presentation that he'll be doing this fall. He was doing his notes today, and I found them so very interesting, and asked him if I could post the notes, and also if he would give us a small discussion about the topic of the individuality, initiation, and the ego.
Yes, well, Tyla, thank you for asking me to do this. I had already said to the people who had requested that I speak on these two different topics that I would be doing an audio about them, basically as a warm-up, because I'm so excited. Now, the reason I'm excited is this is in October, and this is a group of naturopaths and doctors and people who are basically opening one of the most interesting, I don't even know what to call it. I would call it a new mystery initiation center, but they're opening a life mastery training program, basically. And so they wanted me to address what is initiation in the 21st century, and also how is it that we gain mastery of our own ego. Now, these two topics are so near to my heart that there is no way that I can fit what I have to say into, you know, an hour and a half talk. Or a workshop presentation on one day. But you can come and you can join in this because it's open to the public. And I can tell you that it's one of the coolest things that I've seen because out of their own inner work, they came to the same conclusions that we came to in studying the Mystery Initiation Centers and then creating our own modern personal self-initiation in our third book on the Gospel of Sophia, which is about the Sophia Christos initiation. But it isn't just about that brand. It's about showing you how anyone can initiate themselves and then giving you a variety of different languages of the spirit from drawn from the great world religions to show you that they can be distilled down to the same type of thing. You need a language of the spirit. To have the language of the spirit, you need some letters. Those 22 letters are the tools that we give you in over a dozen different forms so that you can yourself choose what works for you and then see who you are through a process of self-initiation. Now in the past, as is written up in the description of the first talk, which will be the opening talk on the first night, I'm supposed to focus on initiation. Well, my whole life has been an initiation. I was born, as some of you have heard me say, and I now can't believe I say this openly because it usually causes a curse and people to attack me, but I was born clairvoyant, clairaudient, and clairsentient. So all my life I've been trying to study religions, study anything spiritual, to see if it coincided with what my own personal experience was. And that was because I couldn't find anybody to talk to me about my experience. And when I did, I sounded like a nut. So I went to the spiritual books and the spiritual revelations, and lo and behold, there they were. And those revelations before, you know, there's Christian revelations, there's open revelations, but then there's hidden mystery initiation centers that go way back to ancient Egypt, ancient Greece, ancient Persia, ancient India, ancient China, and these mystery initiation centers took an aspirant who wanted to become an initiate to get the wisdom that was inside of this mystery initiation center. So if we go very far back into ancient history and look at, say, Greek or Egyptian mystery initiation center practices, or even the Pythagoras and Crotona, or wherever you want to look, basically what you're going to see is the aspirant must go through stages of preparation. Sometimes it would take a year or two, like in the Greek mysteries of the Eleusinian mysteries of Eleusis outside of Athens. Sometimes it would take 2 years. Now, the fact that those mystery initiation centers there in Eleusis and the caves outside of Athens, everyone knew about it, and it was a wonderful thing you did for your child when you had to pay for it, you sent your child to do the preparation could take years. And if you were not prepared, they did not let you in. So this wasn't some perfunctory thing. No, this was, in some of these initiations, they tried to scare you to death because death was a component of them, but so that you would awaken to who your I am is, who your ego is. But in others, for instance, the Eleusinian Mysteries, what are they telling you? They're telling you that through a series of symbols and experiences in a cave in relationship to the earth, water, air, and fire, you would then be, it would be revealed to you, and get ready, here's the big initiation of Eleusis, that the light of the moon is reflected from the sun. Now, you may think that's not a big secret, but that then shows that the earth's not flat, and it just by saying that to someone who had been observing the moon all their life, it answered a fantastic question because they believed that the sun and the moon were beings. So when you were told that the light of the sun not only reflects on the moon, but also they would hold up a handful of wheat and they would say, this is from the sun. So now it's shocking, but if you said to a modern person, everything on the earth that had any life all comes from the sun, they would laugh at you and say, of course we know that. So mystery initiation wisdom in the past seemed as if in some cases it was trite, but in fact it was utterly profound, because if you look into the symbols have more meaning than even our theories in scientific humanism as we have it now. So secular humanism or scientism, whatever you want to call it. So the ancient initiation centers were to awaken and basically the consciousness of you in relationship to the world. So above the temple of Delphi, it said, O man, know thyself and thou wilt know the gods and the world. Well, the gods were the active beings and the world is your place in the world. You would also know yourself. So you would know yourself, you'd know the gods, in other words, all the active, what we'd call scientific forces. And then you'd know the world. You'd know why you were here. What is the world? What's that about? In other words, you'd be given a cosmology, a purpose in life that showed where you came from, where you are, and where you're going. Now, there are many versions of what was revealed in the mysteries, and many of these mysteries are still sealed to this day, and we can only look at the symbols and the paintings and the so on and so forth, but not understand, even if we have the words, we may not understand those words. So to put ourselves in the mind of an ancient who was going through that, remember, that was in ancient times. The human ego, the human I am, did not come to really self-reflective consciousness until what we call the Abrahamic Age, or approximately 2000 BC. So in between the Megalithic Age of 3000 BC and 2000 BC, humans kind of woke up. They saw the world and they built megalithic structures that showed that they understood the Platonic years, the Platonic age. They understood the precession of the equinox. They understood the wandering stars, and they understood much more than we think we understand at this point. And they enlivened it with the beingness that they experienced in a communion with them. So that's what the initiation centers were for in those days, before you had a really developed ego, a self-reflective, objective person who could think about their thinking. And could not just see a stream of mental images like in a dream, but be able to control that thinking. Well, that type of being was the first really evidence of a human personal ego that had the ability to really love out of freedom. And that's the real mission of what an ego is supposed to be doing. And that's the second part of this talk I'm doing. Is ego mastery. Where does the ego come from? Where does it go? What's it about? If you don't have a cosmology, you are not going to understand that. And you're going to not know your place in the universe and the cosmos. And what did the Mystery Initiation Centers teach you? As above, so below. Or man, know thyself. Or human, know thyself. And you will know the gods and the world. This was a complete comprehensive cosmology that was being given in these Mystery Initiation Centers. In other words, it was multi-stage, and of course you had to go through oblations and preparations and renunciation, and in some cases you had to not eat meat, or you had to go without sex, or not drink any alcohol, or so on and so forth. So to prepare for hearing the mystery initiation wisdom might take you years. And in some cases, they might not find you worthy and you wouldn't make it in. In the Egyptian, you would come to the Egyptian temple, you'd look at the outside, and there'd be nothing. You'd enter through a small door and you'd enter the outer court. And there you would see some music, some art and some music and some experiences. That was the outer court. Then there was a second court, and then there was a third court. Only the initiates got into the third court. So there's almost always 3 degrees of initiation. In mystery initiation centers, in Masonic, Freemasonic rituals, in most of the initiations that I've experienced, which is literally dozens, because I went around going to mystery initiation reenactments, as well as what were the remnants of them, the Rosicrucians, the Rosicrucian Masons, the Co-Masons, you name it.
Well, maybe it would be relevant for people to know that when we set up the structure for the glass bead game, we had this in mind. And when you come to aim for truth, you're coming essentially to our outer court. And then we have other sites that lead you into the second court, to the, the third court, to the inner court, because the glass bead game is an initiation as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned that. And that's what we tried to do in all of our works, but particularly in the Gospel of Sophia, is to show that you're on your own. Humanity has been dragged across the threshold between the physical and the spiritual, so that's the reason that we have so many weird things happening now. Because the good and the bad come in, both from both sides, the lower demonic side and the higher spiritual side. So right now we have access, because the threshold of the spiritual world is so thin, it hardly exists. Now, most people don't understand. Here's a mystery initiation wisdom for you. When you go to sleep at night, it's a small death. You go into the same place that you go, and the same places that you go after you die. So every night, if you're practicing and you learn how to control your dreams and you learn what your dreams and what that world is telling you, you are communing with the very beings you're going to encounter after death, and you're going to be with them until your next incarnation. So that's mystery initiation wisdom. But in the ancient times, it was a different being that stood there at the guard, as the guardian of the threshold, this threshold I'm speaking of. In modern times, Rudolf Steiner tells us that we're pulled across it whether we like it or not. Now, that would be because since the atomic age, we were told that any minute, we could be blown up. Now we're told that any person you see could have a virus that could kill you. We are in an age when death is all around us. Well, in most cases, mystery initiation experiences had to do with ritual deaths, whether it be Freemasonic death of Hiram Abiff, whether it be the days of sleep, 3 days of sleep in the Great Pyramid with the 12 hierophants standing around you. It doesn't matter. Whether it be Asclepius, for the healing of the Greeks, it was their dreams. They healed you in your dreams, you see, because then you can work with the spiritual beings that actually cause your illness. So what we're showing here with this opening of, I'm not going to give out the name right now, but we are going to give out all the information later, but this group is opening the most brilliant idea. I wish I would have come up with the idea that mystery initiation centers need to be open. Well, Steiner came up with that. He said the old mysteries are dead. The new mysteries have to do with self-initiation. And he told us we can do that through being a Waldorf teacher. The 8 years of watching a child's etheric body grow can be an initiation. Using the, according to Steiner, using the foundation stone meditation properly in its proper rhythms can be an initiation. But generally, when you look into the past, it's going to be up to you to determine if any of that's any good for you. That's the reason we give you, I think, 12 or 13 different languages of the spirit so you can choose yourself, right? That's the deal. In this age, you have your own star. You are your own North Star. You're your own compass. You are your own church of one. And what we're finding is that the initiations that come from the past, they have some value if you put them in perspective. I've been initiated by so many, I don't even want to start naming them because I'll get carried away. But I've been initiated by the people who people say are the highest people around in these spiritual traditions and lineages. And that's all good. But none of that really helps you if it doesn't help you become a better person each day of your life. If you experience the spirit and it doesn't send you back with hope and love, then you didn't experience the Spirit. You experienced your own luciferic, self-indulgent, illusory body. And that's okay. In the past, that's what helped us develop our ego. So when we talk about initiation, it's all about the ego. But it's knowing that the ego has stages, knowing the ego has a past, it has the current development and future development, and who were we in the past, where did we come from, and where are we going in the future?
Well, let's go back to this process of initiation. So what we're seeing now is all of humanity is moving through an initiation process. But is everybody aware of that? I mean, will people go through an initiation process here and not even be aware that this is happening?
Absolutely. And what does it do? It brings out your evil thinking, your evil feeling, your evil willing, your three doppelgangers, these three evil beasts that stand at the dweller as the dweller. They're like the three-headed dog of hell.
Well, give you an example, because when you cross the threshold in the way that we're speaking, thinking, feeling, and willing are separated. Am I correct on this?
Yes.
Because I want to make sure I've got this right here. And so we've crossed this threshold, and when people are walking around with their face mask on, not everybody, but I see people who are willing. They're using their willing force, but they're not thinking what they're doing. And so that's isolated. So you see how thinking and feeling got apart. And what we have to do in this new humanity, this new realm we move into, is we need to elevate thinking, feeling, and willing with our ego and transform it into the higher forms of imagination, inspiration, and intuition.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And people here who are listening to us, this is the process that you have been working on.
Oh, yes. And any anthroposophist, even in the beginning stages, is trying to develop higher thinking, which is called by Rudolf Steiner imagination, and by Ralph Waldo Emerson, even before Steiner said it, imagination, but not fantasy, but imagination that actually connects you to angels in your thinking. And then in your feeling, you can connect to archangels, the folk spirits, once you become bigger than just the folk spirit of your own nation, and you start to really embrace everyone for who they are and love them, which is really hard to do. And then that's the problem. And that's the problem that Tyler just highlighted. When you cross the threshold, willingly or unwillingly, your thinking, feeling, and willing will be pulled in three different directions. If you don't have a strong ego that can hold them together, then what you're going to see is all of the sins of your thinking, feeling, and willing, if you're awake, right there at the threshold. Now, most people just go dead unconscious when they go to sleep, and they oftentimes don't even have any dreams. And that's because they're spiritual materialists, or just materialists, and they don't go beyond the moon at night when they go to sleep. They don't go to the realm of Venus and Mercury and the Sun and Mars and Jupiter and Saturn. They stay just in the sub-realms of the moon. The 28 steps between here and the moon are basically the 28 desires that leads you straight to hell, or the seven deadly sins. So they go from their heart down into their lower chakras instead of going from their heart to the upper chakras. It's very, very simple. So when it comes down to mystery initiation wisdom, oftentimes you'll read a Steiner lecture and you'll think, well, he didn't say that much. But if you really think about it for, you know, a long time, then you might understand that just the alternation of day and night, okay? He's going to tell you that's one of the big rhythms that we must pay attention to. And you'll say, well, that's just silly. Of course we have day and night. No, here's what he's talking about. Almost every single disturbed person and criminal in the world has disruptive sleep patterns. Why is that? Because they can't interact in their sleep with the spiritual beings because they can't go to sleep because what the Greeks used to call the Furies, who became a different group called the Orestes. But the Furies used to chase you around if you did something wrong. You should be thankful of that, because now people do things wrong and they have no conscience whatsoever. And then at night when they try to sleep, well, they certainly don't have dreams, or if they do, they're probably nightmares, or they can't sleep, or they have sleep problems, sleep disturbance problems. So simple little mystery, wisdom, initiation, knowledge like that is utterly profound. But on the other hand, go as deep as you want. It doesn't matter who you are. If you talk about mystery initiation wisdom, you could get into the concepts of the Kabiri, the Samothracian Kabiri, or actually the forces of the planets, the harmony of the spheres, well known about by the Greeks, turned into the different mystery initiation music that they used. Each of the mystery initiation centers around Greece, around Athens, used a different type of music, and it completely different. And each one of those types of music, the Hippolytian, the Dorian, all these, and some of them have come down to us now. We chose the Jupiter one. Each one of them relates to a planet. So they knew this, but it was a direct experience for them. If you said to someone now, listen to your heart and you'll hear the harmony of the spheres, they would think that you're absolutely out of your mind. But if you said, science has shown that vibrations from the planets within the sphere of the tail of our magnetosphere actually creates harmonic resonance with the morphological structure of the organs, particularly on the surface within 3 centimeters, then they'd all go, oh my gosh, I believe now. So in the ancient times, when you initiated, you met beings. And we can go into so many different descriptions because they're all absolutely very interesting to me because I actually worked on a degree. I have a degree in comparative religions, and so I was always going through every religion to find the real experience that the people they said were having revelation, direct experience of the spiritual world, direct communion, and then I would see if that actually was what I experienced. And it's just amazing. Yes, it is. And I can tell you that there's a golden thread through all religions, and I've never found any valid traditional religion with a true lineage that either didn't have mystery initiation wisdom in it or bastardized versions of mystery initiation wisdom. Now, when it came into modern times, that became Freemasonry, okay? It became all of these, it became so many clubs and societies that I'm not going to start to list them all because I would get crazy because I've joined most of them just to see what was there in their core. What is it they're teaching? Did somebody have a revelation even with Mormonism? I studied Mormonism. I studied Tibetan Buddhism. I studied Hatha Yoga, Agni Yoga, every type of yoga you can imagine, and every type of ecclesiastical study that had a dogma is have incredibly interesting to me. Why? Because if you put it in perspective in a timeline, which has a cosmology that shows where your ego came from, why it's doing what it's doing now, and where your ego is going in the future, it all fits together. And Rudolf Steiner, of course, gives the best version of that in his spiritual science, but it doesn't matter. Any true, valid spiritual revelation is going to have this content in it. What we like about Steiner is that he's so exact, he can give medical indications, educational indications, very specific, exact dates for historical things, even biological things, cosmological things, doesn't matter, architecture, art, music, doesn't matter, all of it. If someone asked him to focus on it, then that's what he studied until he had direct communion with those beings, and so what he taught was then, it was for all time. You know, the wisdom of Rudolf Steiner has yet to be comprehended by enough people to actually make it a significant world force yet. There are many people using pieces of it, very small pieces, and he describes that in the myth of Isis, the new myth of Isis, which he points out. Rudolf Steiner points out, we must come up with new myths. We must come up with new fairy tales. To rewrite history, we must come up with new archetypes and icons that lead us to the beingness behind the ancient Greeks' ideas of archetypes. So that is what he was about. Why? Because he could contact those beings. Well, so did I, especially when I was much younger. So I'm reading Steiner to see if what I experienced was the same thing he experienced. And what I find is that initiation science, no matter where you look, what you find, if you know what you're looking at, it's all the same, but it's describing something that's in change. What is in change? The human ego, the human I am. But then you see, that leads to some of the most confusing of religious and ecclesiastical and spiritual concepts, so that people are just flapping their gums in the wind if they don't understand the development of the ego through the whole human life, where it came from, how it's developed, what bodies it develops at what time, when you have sensitive periods when you should be teaching those bodies and what specifically you should be teaching them, as in Waldorf schools. And then where are you going? Because if you don't know where you're going, what is the goal anyway? Well, so that's
people,
the whole point.
If people understood these concepts, they would see why the harm that's being done to children right now with the social engineering, even up to pedophilia and all the horrific things they're doing to children, is ripping their etheric body, which they're going to need as they go forward. Because for folks who may not have studied Rudolf Steiner, when you are born, you're first protected by the sheath that your mother provides you. And then you move into the sheath that your family provides you. And then your next sheath is what the community provide you, because we don't expect a 15-year-old to have as much wisdom and capacity in the world as a 42-year-old. So we have systems in place to help that forming ego to be protected as they continue to evolve. So when you rip a child out as a late-term abortion, of course, you have ruined their ability to form as a physical body, much less everything else. But if you rape a child and you do these horrible things that we're reading about Epstein Island to children of this age, do you realize what you've done to them for the rest of their lives, and how you've ripped that ego? And then if your community fails you, your schools are indoctrinating you with cultural Marxism and the hatred of your country and God, then your astral sheath is torn to sunder. So by the time that you come to 21 and you're ready for your ego to be emerged, it is like you don't even know what sex you are. And let me tell you something. We all have always known this in spiritual science, the development of the ego. The enemy does too, and that's why they've worked so hard to destroy the various sheaths along the way without you paying attention.
So true. So true, Tyler. And it's exactly that. You have to know when the ego is doing what. And so, for instance, you don't even get your ego until you're 21. And then you get 7 years to try to build it. And between 21 to 28, people, if they tell you to be selfless, well, then they're ridiculous. You're supposed to be completely self-centered. You're building yourself so that after 28, as Rudolf Steiner points out, which is actually that number is going down all the time, but let's just say that we grow old until we're 28, then we turn around and we grow back to our birth. And we replicate what we advanced through going up to 28. So from 21 to 28, you're just growing your ego. So until you even have one at 28, to be selfless is almost impossible. And unless you come in with some kind of propensity or capacity from a past life and blah, 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 and you're focused on that. I don't know. There's always exceptions. But the point is, we have to, from birth through seven, in the mother school, we have to protect those children and realize that they're imitating their environment. But then from 7 to 14, it is their mental imaging. It is their imagination that we must build based upon reality, but not limited. Big pictures drawn and painted before they're ever written about.
And this, you're never going to get these in public school indoctrination centers, ever. And it's just gotten so bad. These children will be destroyed before they're ever adults.
Right.
They already are. We see the results in this resistance against America from the folks that graduated from these very liberal, radical, extreme colleges and universities that really, they harvest those human beings for their student debt just so they get all the money. They ruin their lives, their brain. Everything has been ruined for these folks because of this evil. And this is why we keep saying, if you can't afford religious, parochial, or private school setting this year, 2020, 2021, then please consider homeschooling, because the evils that are being done to your children will never be, they will destroy your child at some level.
In a Waldorf school, and everyone I've ever been in, when we give the state test at the end of eighth grade, most of the children, and I mean most of them, some of them are far beyond, are already at a 12th grade level. They've already passed anything you can learn in high school. So what is it you're supposed to learn in high school? Well, In a Waldorf school, they create a high school program, but it basically reteaches at a higher level what they learned in the lower school. But here's what they're really learning. This is a process of apprenticeship, journeyman, master. In the old days, it was a guild system. And what is really happening here is the children are apprentices, and they're with their teacher for 8 years, first through eighth grade. And what do they teach them? The only thing Edward Steiner says a teacher can teach a child is who they are. So here you have a master teacher, hopefully, who is teaching these apprentices to become journeymen. And then in the journeyman stage, when they should be from 14 to 18 or 18 to 21, they should be traveling around as a journeyman, going to study with other masters so that they get out of just the one view that their master taught them for 8 years, their class teacher. So they go and they study with other masters as they travel around in the old way, the old guilds of Europe. And I was called a journeyman, so they took a journey. So my teacher used to say the best education would be if everybody just got in a bus and just went from place to place. So the journeyman goes to new masters, and the masters teach him new things, and then the masters will sign off, and they go to another master. And once that journeyman has feel that they're a master, they come back and they then prove themselves with other masters by their creations, and then they can open their shop. Well, if we did that, and we had that type of apprenticeship program, a guild, if we had that type of mentoring, if we had that type of true life mastery or the art of living that is being taught by the Waldorf class teacher to the class, because the Waldorf class teacher has to learn a new curriculum every year, so that's what they're teaching the child, their ability to learn a new curriculum. Otherwise, what are you teaching them? Old stuff? Stuff that anybody can study from a GED book, you know? I mean, please. What we're really teaching is the joy, the love, the wisdom, the hope, the grace, the beauty, the truth, the goodness that is found in studying the whole world and the place of the human being in that world. And that's what a Waldorf teacher is trying to teach. So that is an initiation, and that's why the Waldorf teacher can get initiated by watching a class full of students go through that process of finding their place in the world properly in the proper sequence during the sensitive periods when you're giving the children the very food that they need to live. So the three stages of apprenticeship, journeyman, master is also found in Freemasonry. It's found in almost, well, I will not say every, certainly more than 50%, 60% of the initiations have a three-step process, and you're not a master until you reach the third step. And I like what Michio Kushi says, and I noticed this with Tyler when I first met her. She had an art of life, and I'm going, I don't have that art of life yet, so you know, I need to learn that. And once you have the art of life, well, then you're going to be successful, period. Whatever it is you're doing, you're going to be successful. So once you have the art of life, anyone looking at you knows that you are living the art of life. And Michio Kushi says you should take that as then a commission that you must teach 10 people, 10 disciples, how it is that you attain the art of life. That is your mission. You must do that. And then he says, after that, if you can get that far and you have time in your life, write or read or communicate to 10,000 people. Send out what you know about the art of life to 10,000 people. And if you can even go beyond that, do it globally. And he did.
And when you told me this when we were first married, I said, wow, okay, well, can we use YouTube?
And you have reached millions, and so, millions, Tyler.
And it's not just about this. It's about all of you guys out there making sure that your audience, your network, is also receiving this information, because we can walk ourselves right out of this nightmare that we're in the world once we awaken those around us.
If you had the art of life, you would have love. And love would make you want to share it with other people so that it could help them. Now, what is the art of life? What do you consider to be life? Here's what I consider to be life: that which is eternal. There's, you know, temporal life, and then there's cosmological life. There's eternal life. Love is eternal. Grace is eternal. Beauty, truth, goodness, they're all eternal. So whatever you're doing that is eternal, is building new worlds. And that's where your ego is going to live in the future, in future incarnations.
And the most eternal thing that a parent can do is bring in healthy babies into a loving family setting and then teach them all that you just explained.
And I'll just say one final thing, unless you have other things you want to talk about, and that's that basically getting initiated, you go from being more than a human into super worlds, into higher worlds, and you start to take on what you will become as an angel. Well, you have to decide first off, your ego, your I am, is it going to become an angel? Is it going to remain a human? Or is it going to go back to being an animal? And that's the first decision. And that's the first decision of, am I ready to get prepared for the process of initiation so that I can develop my ego in relationship to an entire cosmological picture, but at a certain point, commit to being selfless with that ego so that anything that I receive from the spiritual world, any communion that I am fed, I use to help others who are on that same path that I was on. Because we're all on the path and we can be at the very last moment ready to reach the summit and tumble back down. So we all need each other. And initiation used to be a group process and they chose you in most cases. Now it's a self process and you must choose to do that yourself. But the beauty of it is there are groups like this group I'm talking about who are literally starting a process of an open mystery initiation center to help them develop their personal life, their family life, their community life, and their life in relationship to our entire earth.